everybody, and welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. Of course, you can tell this is not Michael Cutler. No, this is Commander Tom Garcia filling in for him. Tonight, Michael's on the road. He is going to be viewing a new movie tonight. I believe it is tonight at the Yadkin Valley Tea Party. Invasion Freedom Fire 2, North Carolina. It's the first public screening of a documentary that he participated in that focuses on the way that the failures to secure America's borders against illegal entry and the way that the failures to effectively enforce and administer the immigration laws from within the interior of the United States imperil the safety, security, and well-being of the United States and its citizens. And of course, if you didn't know it already, Michael Cutler is a retired 30-year INS officer, and when he talks about the border, when he talks about immigration, when he talks about national security, he knows precisely what he's talking about. Now, there's some other ways to connect with him. One, you've got this show, and if you go to usaradionetwork.com, go to the Michael Cutler page, you can listen to him like you would be listening to me right now. You can download, you can stream past shows, archives of all the shows that he's done, and you don't want to miss out on that. Let's see, what else can I tell you about Michael? Okay, if you go to his website, michaelcutler.net, michaelcutler.net, don't want to miss that. Good website. He puts all of his articles on his website. Great articles for reading. Very enlightening. I've learned a lot from him over the years. And, of course, he has a TV show on AND Magazine, A-N-D Magazine. You can get to his TV show by going directly to TalkBorder.com, TalkBorder.com. And, of course, he's a senior fellow with CAPS. I don't have that information. Just do a look of CAPS. I'll put it up as the show gets going on. I'll let you know later on before the show's over. He's a senior fellow there and writes articles for them, and they are a immigration enforcement organization that focuses on security, national security, and legal immigration. So, Michael, hope you're enjoying the show tonight. Now, if you have not looked at Michael Cutler's site or listened to the show before, well, thank you so much, and go listen to some of his past shows. But he is very focused on immigration laws and how they harm the U.S., not only physically, but economically. And when I say immigration laws, the lack of enforcement of our immigration laws. We know what the laws are. We're just not enforcing them. Under this administration, they're not being enforced, and it's just getting more and more dangerous for us. So check all that stuff out. Now, as far as I'm concerned, I do a radio show normally on Wednesday nights called The American Hour. And you can get right to my page by going to TomGarcia.com. It's just that simple, TomGarcia.com. I'll take you right to my page on the USA Radio Network. You can follow me on Twitter by going to The American Hour on Twitter. And we're up to 11,000 followers now. The vast majority, I'd say 99% of them, are very conservative people. So we appreciate all of the following that we're getting from Twitterers, and we put at times, I put lots of tweets out there letting people know what's going on in the world. That's really one of my goals, is to try and educate people. Also, on Facebook, we do the same thing. One of the things I've kind of gained a affinity for is cartoons, political cartoons. So I'm always posting political cartoons or humorous photos, et cetera, that have something to do with politics or maybe not so humorous, sometimes disgusting. Now, not the photo or the picture is disgusting, but the concept, the failure of our leaders, et cetera. That's what I find very disgusting, the lack of leadership and the failure of leadership in our government today. So you can go to Facebook and look up The American Hour Radio Show. Now, of course, Michael's shows and my shows and other folks that broadcast on the USA Radio Network can all be found on iTunes. If you want to download from iTunes, you don't have to, but it's all there. If you do a search for USA Radio Network, if you do a search for Michael Cutler Hour, you're not going to find Michael Cutler shows. You've got to go to USA Radio Network to find our shows, and you will. You will find them if you go there. So USA Radio Network on iTunes, and you can download shows for free, past shows, going back the last, I don't know, at least a couple of years. So that's always an option and available. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about today. I've got a guest coming on a little bit later on, William Owens Jr., and I'm going to let him tell you what he's working on and what's going on with him. But we have some news today, and there's always, well, I tell you what, it seems like as we get closer to selection, there's more and more stuff coming out almost on an hourly basis. It's just breaking news. The Obama campaign now has a picture of Mitt Romney sitting on a stool with a dunce hat on. That would imply that Mitt Romney is not very bright. Huh. Seems to me the other night on Jay Leno, President Obama said he did okay with math up through about the seventh grade, and then that was it. Seventh grade math? You've got to be kidding me. That's as good as his math is? And he somehow knows how to handle the economy, how to handle finance, significantly complicated finance for an entire nation, the biggest, the most wealthy nation on the planet. He somehow knows that better than Mitt Romney. And he's a self-admitted idiot. I mean, a self-admitted idiot. That his math only goes up to the seventh grade. That's what he said on Jay Leno. You know, he does these self-deprecating things that are kind of funny. It's so unpresidential. It's so unpresidential. Now, I want to I'll play a little clip for you because I've played this many times on my show, but we have to remember this stuff. We have to remember this stuff and who we're dealing with here. Remember the president telling us about all the shovel-ready jobs? Okay, now, part of this is because I'm going to get into this. Because the president said, all you have to do is look at the videos of me in the past, and you can see that I say what I mean. I say what I mean. And so there's a good article on BuzzFeed. I'm going to go through a little bit of it. He says, yeah, go ahead and look for my flip-flops. You're not going to find them. You're going to find all of Romney's if you go look through videos of him, but you're not going to find me flip-flopping. Really, Mr. President? No flip-flopping. Okay. Well, I got a couple little clips here to play. Let's start off with him assuring us. Now, this isn't even flip-flopping. This is just pure incompetence. He's going to tell us all about the job, the shovel-ready jobs that are all ready to go all over the country.
I think we can get a lot of work done fast. When I met with the governors, all of them have projects that are shovel-ready. We've got shovel-ready projects all across the country. Shovel-ready projects, rebuilding our roads, our bridges. We are seeing shovels hit the ground. Shovels are breaking ground. There are almost 100 shovel-ready transportation projects already approved in Colorado, which are beginning to create jobs.
Beginning to create jobs. Oops, not so fast. Because after a year of that, what did we see when he's meeting with his so-called economic advisors and leaders? What did he have to say about shovel-ready jobs then? After Mr. No Experience, No Resume, he found out that it's not that easy. But he was so convincing, wasn't he? Shovel-ready, shovel-ready, shovel-ready. Let's see what he had to say a year later.
Shovel-ready was not as shovel-ready as we expected. Shovel-ready was not as shovel-ready as we expected.
And it's really worth laughing over. It's so funny. Ha, ha, ha. The incompetence is unbelievable. He is pure incompetence. I've never seen somebody to rise to that level and be so incompetent, so absolutely incompetent. And then he laughs about it. He laughs about his own incompetence. And then he tells Jay Leno that he essentially is as smart as a seventh grader when it comes to math. Wow. That's just impressive. That's so impressive. Hey, there are a lot of seventh graders. When I was in the seventh grade, I think I was already taking calculus. You know, I was taking high school level math classes just because, you know, I wasn't great at math, but I just wanted to get ahead. I wanted to be ready for college. So by the time I came out of high school, I was way, way up on the math level, which is something that you generally need, depending on what school you go to. But if you're going to be an engineer, you got to be good at math. So I was taking advanced level math all through high school, and generally the youngest one in my class. I was in classes where the kids were all a year or two older than me because I was trying to get so far ahead. Anyway, so yeah, he got lost after the seventh grade when it came to math. Oh my gosh. I mean, most kids aren't even getting into algebra. I don't think you're even starting algebra in the seventh grade yet. That's pathetic. Pathetic. Okay, now we got to remember what he promised to do. These aren't flip-flops. These are just failures. Failures. But we're going to get to his flip-flops in a second. Absolute failures. Abject failures. 7 seconds.
That's why today I'm pledging to cut the deficit we inherited by half by the end of my first term in office.
Wow. Notice he's got the we inherited in. What's Romney going to inherit? Do you think Romney's going to run around the country for 4 years going, that's not my fault. I inherited it. It's all Obama's fault. I mean, I wouldn't mind hearing that. I wouldn't mind hearing somebody for the next 4 years going, it's all Obama's fault, not my fault. You know what the media is going to do? They're going to crucify Romney if the economy isn't growing at 10% a year, every quarter for the year, and unemployment's down at 1%. You know, they're going to crucify him for being a failure. But this guy, the worst economic recovery since the Great Depression. And let me tell you why we always say the worst economic recovery since the Great Depression. The Great Depression was the worst economic recovery in history. And why was it that it was so bad? All because of FDR. He doubled down on Hoover's tariff increases, so nobody in the world could or would or wanted to trade with us. Increased taxes at one point. Anything over $25,000 was going to be taxed at 100%. Taxes through the roof. Highest taxes during the Depression. Now, we all know raising taxes in a depression or a recession is not a good thing. FDR raised taxes to the highest levels that they have ever, ever been. And everybody always thinks that getting out of World War II and all the money that was poured into that war got us out of the Depression. No, getting rid of FDR got us out of the Depression. I mean, think about it. We've gotten out of Iraq. We're in the process of getting out of Afghanistan. Are we just rebounding into this fantastic recovery right now? No, it has nothing to do with getting out of a war. Plus, the war is all off budget. There's another thing you need to know. If you didn't know this, Afghanistan and Iraq are all off budget. So when the libtards tell you that now we've got this peace dividend, all this money we're going to be saving, we're not saving any money by not being there. We're just not going into debt anymore. That was all printed money. There was never any money budgeted for those wars. Yes, the Defense Department gets budgeted money and for its normal activities. So that was already spent. All of the money for the war overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan off budget. In other words, not part of the budget. So there is no peace dividend. The peace dividend is we're just not going into debt as fast. So, and again, you can say, well, all this is the reason we've got these big trillion-dollar budgets or deficits, Tom. They're off budget. I'll say it again. They're off budget, which means they're not counted in the annual deficit. They're just on top of it all. So there's no peace dividend here other than getting our troops home and not going further into off-the-book debt. The debt's there. It's real. It's just not on the books. So that's a big problem for us that we have to get beyond. And yet the president and his water-carrying media cronies will tell you that, oh, we're going to have all kinds of money now that we're not in Iraq and Afghanistan to spend, because they love spending money. They just can't spend enough of it, and they will drive us further into debt. All right, so let's talk about some of the flip-flopping of the president. He claims, oh, I'm not a flip-flopper. I say what I mean. Well, let's just see. In 96, in answering the questionnaire, it is a political questionnaire, he said that he supports banning assault weapons and handguns. Not just assault weapons, rifles, but handguns as well, banning them. Wow, that kind of violates the Constitution, the Second Amendment, but if you want to find this stuff, go to BuzzFeed. Under politics, just look for the article, Obama says to look for, at videotape for his flip-flops. He says that Mitt Romney has been flip-flopping. But me? Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. Let's take a look at some other flip-flops. Because today he says, oh, no, I don't want to ban handguns. Just, you know, maybe we need to talk. We need to have a, he always says this, we need to have a conversation about assault weapons. That means banning them. Okay. Let's see. In 2004, he said, my religious faith dictates marriage between a man and a woman. Gay marriage is not a civil right. That was in the Illinois Senate debate. Notice how he, depending on what he's running for, what the situation is, he'll say one thing, he'll say something else. Then, in 2004, but now he's all for it, because he's evolved. Yeah, he's evolved. Well, that's called flip-flopping, Mr. President. Flip-flopping. But to him, it's just evolving. Well, then Mitt Romney was evolving, too. Not flip-flopping. Which is it? Is it flip-flopping or evolving? All right, in 2004, Barack Obama said, we need to decriminalize our marijuana laws. And in a 2007 debate, he said he opposed decriminalizing marijuana. Well, which is it? I mean, he says, you can take him at his word. When I say something, I mean it. Except, well, which one is it then? Okay, Mr. Flip-Flopper. 2004, he said, we need to end the Cuba embargo. What's he say today? No, no. 2004, he said, he does not oppose cracking down on businesses that hire illegal immigrants. He did not oppose cracking down on businesses that hire illegal immigrants. That's 2004. 2007, he says the Bush administration hides behind executive privilege. He later asserted it on Fast and Furious. So he asserted executive privilege, not for his correspondence, but for a cabinet member's correspondence, which executive privilege doesn't cover cabinet member correspondence. I mean, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? He violates his oath of office. He violates the Constitution. Let's see. Oh, in 2008. He said he opposed an individual mandate for health care. And what do we have? An individual mandate. Wow. Okay. So he's not a flip-flopper at all. But worse yet, he's a liar. I've got an article here you might want to take a look at from, let's see, it is American Thinker. Let me get to it. And it's by Selwyn Duke. Barack Obama's a liar. Now, he makes the case that the president isn't just, oh, I forgot, you know, or, oh, I'm twisting the truth a little bit. You know, politicians do that stuff. But he's a pathological liar. Now, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to show you how bad, just how bad he is, just how much of a liar the president is. I mean, this is over the top. We can talk about Benghazi. It's not that all of the news. You already know what's going on there. I'm just going to point one thing out a little later on about Libya. But you know that a video came out a week or two ago where he was appearing before a mostly black audience in 2007 and speaking in the Ebonics style of speaking, although he's never lived in a black community. So, yes, he was pandering to the audience. Obama accused the federal government of showing cruel indifference to the primary black victims of Hurricane Katrina. The evidence, he claimed, involved something called the Stafford Act, which requires, this is what the Stafford Act does, it requires a locality receiving federal disaster relief to provide 10% of as much money as Washington does. So if Washington says, here's $1 million, okay, they got to come up with 10% of that. They got to come up with $100,000 to match. Otherwise, if they can't match it, then they don't get the federal money. That's the point. And some places can't match that. So sometimes the Stafford Act gets waived. So he says to them, well, look what happened in New York City on 9/11. The Stafford Act was waived. And that was the right thing to do. When Hurricane Andrew struck in Florida, people said, look at this devastation. We don't expect you to come up with your own money. Here's the money to rebuild, because you're part of the American family. That's the way the president said it, not quite like that, with a different accent. What's happening down in Nolens? Now that's my accent. Where's your dollar? Where's your Stafford Act money? Makes no sense. Tells me that somehow the people down in Nolens, they don't care about as much. Total racial baiting, race baiting, race baiting. But this guy is the healer. He's going to bring everybody together. No, it's divide and conquer with this guy, because that's how libtards work. That's how Marxist dictators, socialists, that's how they work. Got to divide and conquer. Okay. Well, barely 2 weeks before he gave this speech at the Hampton University, the U.S. Senate had, in fact, waived the Stafford Act for Nolens. Moreover, the city ended up receiving more aid than Florida and New York City combined. Now, what did Thomas Sowell have to say about this? So you could say, well, President, maybe he just wasn't aware of that. Here it comes. According to Thomas Sowell, who wrote at the time, unlike Jeremiah Wright's church, the U.S. Senate keeps records of who was there on a given day. The congressional record for May 24th, 2007, shows Senator Barack Obama present that day and voting on the bill that waived the Stafford Act requirement. Moreover, he was one of just 14 senators who voted against, get this, against the legislation, which included the waiver. Senator Obama voted against it, and yet he stands there before this audience and tells them, number one, it didn't pass, or there was no effort even made when there was, and it passed, and it was waived, but he was against it. Obama votes against the bill that includes the waiver designed to help people about whom he purports to care. Yet the bill passes despite his resistance. Obama nonetheless appears before a black audience not 2 weeks later and claims that the waiver for aid was never granted. Even more damnably, he clearly implies that this is due to white racism. He's a divider, he's a racist, and he's a liar. Now, if you want to go look at that article by Solentuk, he has some other doozies in there that just go to show you what kind of guy we're talking about here. Not a pleasant guy, honestly. I believe he is a pathological liar. And if you like him, I'm sorry for that. If you like President Obama, I feel sorry for you, because you can call him and tell me how much you hate Mitt Romney and, oh, Romney's a liar and on and on. Look, this guy goes beyond anything of any politician I've ever seen at this level, up at the federal level. The lies, I mean, you know, the old saying, if his lips are moving, he's lying. That's pretty much it. You know, if he's throwing this race down the drain, he probably would have won it if he had done things differently. In fact, honestly, if the president could go back a year, year and a half, and everything he's done since then, just do the exact opposite, he'd be winning today. Thank goodness he didn't. But they're now down to the point where they got a show on his website, Mitt Romney in a dunce hat. Do you remember when the president said that he was going to change the way Washington works and be really transparent and, not play partisan politics, be open and honest with the American people, and on and on and on. Oh, my gosh. And what has he done? Not that at all. Let's take a look now at a pledge that Obama made just along these lines in 2009. Yesterday, the White House declined to say when President Obama first learned of three emails. Now, you know, if you've been watching the news today at all, he knew within an hour or two, because the CIA knew. And we've got all kinds of information now about what was going on with the CIA. We'll get to that in a minute. So he knew within 2 hours. Of course, he had to go to bed and get his beauty sleep because he was heading off to Vegas to, fundraise the next day. So he couldn't get involved in this stuff. I mean, that's he didn't have time for this crap. Okay. So three emails the State Department sent to it on September 11 saying the U.S. consulate in Benghazi was under attack and that the group Ansar al-Sharia had taken credit for the attack. Let's go back to 2009 when President Obama promised a new standard of openness. In his January 21st, 2009 remarks, Obama declared that the way to make government responsible is to hold it accountable, and that information will not be withheld just because I say so. Wow. That's good to know. Oh, except now that it is being withheld just because he says so. He goes on. The mere fact that you have a legal power to keep something secret doesn't mean you should always use it. Well, doesn't mean you should use it at all, right? But he says, doesn't mean you should always use it. This was in a presentation to staffers regarding his directive calling for a new era of government transparency. For a long time now, there's been too much secrecy in this city. The old rule said that if there was a defensible argument for not disclosing something to the American people, then it should not be disclosed. That era is over now. That's what he said. Starting today, every agency and department should know that this administration stands on the side not of those who seek to withhold information, but those who seek to make it known. Wow, there's a big whopper of a fib here, huh? Like, just think about Fast and Furious. Oh, there's nothing to see here. Move along. I will also hold myself as president to a new standard of openness. Information will not be withheld just because I say so. Wow. Going forward, anytime the American people want to know something that I or a former president wants to withhold, we will have to consult with the Attorney General and the White House counsel, whose business it is to ensure compliance with the rule of law. Oh, yeah, the Attorney General. Yeah, he follows the rule of law. Absolutely. Okay. Information will not be withheld just because I say so. It will be withheld because a separate authority believes my request is well-grounded in the Constitution. Yeah, he throws out the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution about withholding information or putting information out. I mean, honestly, give me a break. Yet when CNSNews.com asked the White House two simple, straightforward questions regarding the president's knowledge of the emails about the Benghazi attack, it declined to answer. CNS News asked White House National Security Staff aide Debbie Byrd, when did the president first meet with the National Security Council after the Benghazi attack? Two, when did White House staff first discuss the substance of the emails that went to the White House with the president or with the National Security Advisor? I've been asked by one of our spokespeople to relay that we decline to comment, Byrd said. Oh, we decline to comment. Nice. We do know that not only were emails sent, but a flash message, which is a message system used in the government and military that I'm familiar with from my military days, was sent immediately. And the White House would have received it immediately. It's like a text message. Immediate. They knew they were under attack right away. Now, we got Leon, the dumbass Panetta, talking about, well, look, you know, you don't just deploy forces into harm's way without knowing what's going on. Wow, we didn't really know what was going on. Let's see. We had a drone that was filming the whole thing. We had CIA operatives explaining what was going on because they were in communications with higher up within the CIA structure, which was in communication with the White House, direct communications. The CIA operatives had the attackers targeted. They were giving the CIA coordinates, and I don't want to use the word begging because, former Navy SEALs and CIA operatives, they don't beg, but asking for backup. Do you know how far our military base, yes, we have a military base in Italy, in Sigonella, Italy. You know how far that is from Benghazi? Anybody? It's about 450 miles. Not very far to fly, even in a helicopter. Our helicopters move pretty quick. These aren't, Channel 4 choppers. Could have been there very, very quickly and given some backup. Now, I understand. I have some experience in this kind of stuff. You don't just immediately go, oh, send the choppers. Libya, see, here's the ironic thing about it. Libya is a very hostile environment and a very unstable nation. And yet we have our ambassador running out around with virtually no security. But then when the you-know-what hits the fan, oh, boy, yeah, that's dangerous in there. We can't be sending, special forces and military, anybody else in there. That's really dangerous. Well, then what the hell was he doing there to begin with? Huh? What? It's a really dangerous place, dumbass Panetta has to say. Oh, we just can't send, troops into harm's way without knowing what's going on. You send an ambassador into harm's way And you knew there were problems there because there had already been a couple attempted bombings of that consulate, and the ambassador was repeatedly asking for additional security. This has not only been a cover-up, but a massive failure. This is what happens when you elect somebody to the presidency who's never really done anything in life other than agitate. We have a president who knows how to agitate. He knows how to race bait, and he definitely knows how to lie. And that's why he immediately went on the offensive, saying, oh, it's a video that did all this. This was not a coordinated attack. Because he's so naive and incompetent to think that we've got a handle on Al-Qaeda. They're just about exterminated, and, oh, we're just such good friends with Libya. Pure naivety. This guy is incompetent naive because he's never really done anything in life. Look, he admits that his math skills don't go beyond the seventh grade. But he knows more about the economy than Mitt Romney. He knows more about finance than Mitt Romney, absolutely. My goodness gracious. So there we have Leon the Dumbass Panetta, as I like to refer to him, trying to tell us, oh, well, you can't just go sending people in there. That's dangerous. Nice. Well, if you know it's so dangerous, then what do we have a consulate there? Say, well, we didn't know that before. You did know that before. Bombings, threats, and an ambassador who keeps asking for additional security. No, we don't need it. Because this belief that if we just bow down to other countries and apologize for being who we are, that they'll suddenly like us and we'll be safe and A-OK. Well, how's that working for you so far, Mr. Obama? Okay, let's see what else we've got here. I got lots of stuff. Don't worry about this. In the third debate, you know that the president tried schooling Mitt Romney on horses and bayonets in the military. When Mitt Romney said that your naval commanders are saying they need at least 330 ships versus the 285 that we have now. And you're talking about shrinking it even more. Well, you know, it's not the same Navy, Mitt, that it was in 1917. You know, we don't have as many horses and bayonets as we used to, so maybe we don't need as many ships. By the way, we have this thing called an aircraft carrier. Okay, I'm going to school you, Mr. Obama, on the Navy, since I spent a career in the Navy. Number one, all of our soldiers still are issued bayonets for their rifles. So there are more bayonets in the military inventory than there would have been in 1917. We still have horses that are used primarily in the Middle East. We don't ride camels over there. We ride horses. So we got plenty of horses that special folks and Navy SEALs and other people are riding around in the world. Plenty of horses. And they're not just rented. And as far as aircraft carriers go, a battle group is all of the support ships, not only war fighting, but support ships that assist a carrier when it deploys and work with the carrier. Carriers, you don't just put a carrier out in the middle of nowhere and start launching airplanes. It is so much more complicated than that. The carrier and its battle group of a dozen ships or more, including submarines, work together. And so this magical mystery device, the aircraft carrier that has aircraft that fly off of it, they are generally used these days for going in and dropping bombs on bad guys and blowing stuff up. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Does the president think that's all we do? We don't fight other naval ships? Well, let's talk about other navies that might be a threat to us. I mean, is it possible that there could be some militaries out there that are a threat? Well, we know Russia has always had a very large navy. Now it's shrunken quite a bit. They seem to be on the rebound. Who else might have a large navy? Oh, China. In fact, China's increasing military is spending, its military spending, growing of its military, is unnerving its neighbors. And who are its neighbors? Well, they're all allies of ours. Now, what happens when China's navy is bigger and more advanced than ours in the Western Pacific Well, they'll own the Western Pacific. That doesn't mean you're attacking people. But what do the countries out there do then when we don't have any dominance and China does? They start becoming friendly with China. That's what you do. You make friends with the bully on the block or the big guy on the block because you don't want them to get mad at you. So China's military spending has been rapidly spiraling upward, and the growing amounts are unnerving Beijing's Asian neighbors and policy planners in the Pentagon, who are openly wary about the country's long-term intentions. Getting a handle on Chinese military spending is difficult because much of it is opaque and off the books, such as the People's Liberation Army spending on research and space exploration. Do you think they're exploring space to find other civilizations and go where no man has gone before? No, they're working on military space capability. The battleground of the future is going to belong to he who owns space. And I'm not talking space on out to the stars. Earth's lower atmosphere. Not lower atmosphere, but upper atmosphere. That's where the battlefield of the future is. Look at the history of the evolution of warfare. From throwing a rock, hitting with a stick, making a spear, bows and arrows, up through the weaponry that we have today, including the aircraft carrier. That's what gives us our dominance. But when the Chinese military has a navy that's bigger than ours and more advanced and controls Earth's upper atmosphere, lower space, lower outer space, then they own us. They own everybody. They will control the planet. Militarily. And what are we doing about it? We've cut NASA's budget, and we're going to shrink our Navy. So Mitt Romney asks a very, very pertinent question about the Navy and makes a very important point. It's Obama's admirals, flag officers, battlefield commanders are saying we need more ships. But he, with all his vast military experience, somehow knows better. Somehow knows better. Just like his math skills. He knows better about the economy. And Mitt Romney's a dunce with all – oh, my gosh. I'm sure Mitt Romney, from what I've heard, his grades and how well he did academically in college and as a lawyer, getting his law degree. That's why Obama can't show us his records. His grades probably are terrible. And he admits he's essentially got a seventh-grade math education. He was lost after the seventh grade when it came to math. Yet he knows better than a majority of economists. He knows better than Mitt Romney. And then, of course, he knows better than his military commanders, and he knows better than military experts that we can shrink the Navy. It's no big deal. This isn't 1917. We don't need lots of ships running around shooting at each other like it's, some revolutionary war style, big sailing ships fighting each other, us and the Brits, and, Horatio Hornblower. I mean, that's apparently what the president must think that our Navy's all about. Horatio Hornblower, huh? Well, times have changed. We have technology on our side. All right, well, how much is China spending on its military? It's risen from about $20 billion in 2002. To $120 billion last year. Now, I admit, we spend a lot more than that. What's our up around between $600 and $700 billion? The article says the United States still spends four times as much. So I was right. But by some accounts, China is on course to surpass the United States in total military spending by 2035. The increased spending has allowed the People's Liberation Army to embark on a sweeping modernization program that includes new long-range cruise missiles, and how did they get this stuff? How did they come up with the technology? Oh, that's right, Bill Clinton sold it to them. Yeah, Bill Clinton sold them the ability to launch surface missiles at our aircraft carriers and blow them up. That's right, yeah. Some critics, including China's skeptical neighbors, are alarmed at the spending, which they say is being used to bolster China's more assertive stance over long-disputed uninhabited islands in South China and East China Seas. Long-term, some predict China's growing military might shift the balance with American-armed Taiwan, which Chinese leaders consider a renegade province. Yeah, of course. So, article goes on. If you want to look that up, it's in the Washington Post, believe it or not. China's increasing military spending. And it is. But the president, you know, he had to school Romney on the Navy, and pretty much everything he said was wrong. I mean, he doesn't get it. He's commander-in-chief, been commander-in-chief for 4 years now, and he doesn't really even understand the military. And then when our embassy is under attack, he goes to bed and jets off to Las Vegas the next day to fundraise. That's despicable. That's just purely despicable. Oh, we didn't know. I know that's what the media was saying, you know, a couple weeks ago, carrying the water for him like usual. Well, we didn't know what was really going on. We had no idea. We now know they knew exactly what was going on minute by minute. I can't think of anybody that I know that served in the military, if they had been president and that was going on, that would not have been right there paying attention to what was going on, cancel everything else, and let's make an assessment, get our battle group, get our military and CIA top officials together and make a decision. Send in some support help. You know, it's been in the news today, so I don't want to just keep rehashing stuff, but the two former Navy SEALs that were CIA operatives that were working on trying to collect and get our hands on a lot of weaponry that went missing after Gaddafi, you know, fell, especially mainly shoulder-launched missiles. That's what their job, their assignment was. They were told to stand down by the upper echelons. And what did they do? They said, screw this. And they went over there and they got people out of that embassy and got them back to the CIA annex. So good on them, although they lost their lives. So they were heroes to the end. They deserve huge tribute from all Americans for their heroics and their families. Boy, I really feel for them. But they at least know that their husbands, sons, brothers were true heroes to the absolute end. And as they asked for assistance, it was denied because, according to Leon the dumbass Panetta, we just didn't really know what was going on there, and that's a dangerous place. You can't just go sending you know, special forces into a dangerous place. No, but you can put an unarmed ambassador in a dangerous place, you naive idiots. It's sad. It's just really, really sad. So let's see what else we've got here to talk about. Oh, yeah, this is one that kind of, you know, gets me. Now, if you weren't paying attention earlier, when I told you who I am, my name is Tom Garcia. And let me say that with a little bit of an accent. Tomas Garcia. Tomas Garcia. Yes, my heritage is from that of Mexico. My grandfather was Mexican, but a legal citizen in the United States of America. And so I'm a third generation. Now, it's a long story. He wasn't necessarily an immigrant. The family lived in South Florida, going back to before Texas was a territory. And when it was purchased from Mexico, all of my family down in South Texas all instantly became, I mean, if you wanted to, it was always your choice, but all became American citizens right away. Okay, here's what Obama had to say. If I win, it's because of Latinos. I got news for the president. Well, he's got news for us that you don't have to be a citizen to vote. But my point is, Latinos can't vote. Latinos can't vote. Only American citizens can vote. This is the divide and conquer that I mentioned earlier. If you're black, your skin is black, and you're called black. Your skin is white, you're called a white. If it's brown, you're called a Latino. We've got to divide everybody into categories. We're all Americans. I mean, when I grew up in the military, my dad was an Air Force officer. I knew people had different colors of skin, but I didn't. They were all Americans, you know. My dad was very, very patriotic. Of course, that rubbed off on me, and I just, you know, really loved the military, and that's why I went into the military. But I didn't really see any differences other than the color. But to me, that, you know, I didn't see it anybody treated any differently, and that's how the military is and was. I didn't see anybody getting treated any differently. We just all were kids. We all played, had a great time. There was a whole mix of different types of kids on the bases I lived on as a kid, on these military bases. So for a president to get elected, who we've never had an American of African heritage get elected, to be the first, oh, great, it's the first. Cool. And now we can all move on because, hey, if we can elect somebody like Barack Obama, then obviously the majority of the country is not racist, clearly. And yet this very president has to talk about Latinos and blacks and whites and Koreans and on and on and on and Asians. Like, we're all divided up into different groups. This is supposed to be the party of anti-racism, right? Except they keep it alive. You want to see a great book? Go Google Stolen History by Franz Gebrau. He's been on the show several times. On my website, I have a link to his website. I downloaded the Kindle version and read that. I've got a copy of the book, but I wanted to have it on my iPad at all times, so I got a Kindle version and read it again. Democrat Party, I hate to say it because I know some of you out there are Democrats. He was a Democrat. Franz Gebrau was a Democrat and decided to look up the history of the Democrat Party when it came to slavery, segregation, civil rights, on and on. And he was shocked at what he found. He found that the Democrat Party is the party of slavery, segregation, and anti-civil rights. And he documents it all in his book. It's awesome. It's fantastic. Wonderful book. It's worth looking at. So Stolen History by Franz Gebrau. We've got a president who wants to pigeonhole us all into these categories. He's a race baiter. I believe he is a racist. I consider him a racist for the things that he says. And when he says that Latinos, look, I'm not a Latino. I'm an American. I don't ever refer to myself as a Hispanic or Latino or anything like that. I'm an American, period. But he can't get over that because he's got to race bait and divide. That's how one of the ways to conquer is to divide. Divide the people up so they're not united. Divide and get people thinking that there's all kinds of problems that don't actually exist. And, that's what he's trying to do. So it really ticks me off when I see him say that if he wins, it's going to be because of Latinos. Well, Latinos can't vote, Mr. President. They have to be American citizens, and that would make them Americans, or, with a little accent, Americanos. Americans, Mr. President. All right, we're going to take a little break here. We'll be right back with our guest, William Owens, Jr. We'll be right back in a minute. National Veterans Homeless Support, or NVHS, was formed by veterans for the sole purpose of locating and assisting the more than 4,500 homeless veterans living in the parks, forests, and streets of Central Florida. Their mission is clearly defined, to eliminate homelessness among veterans in Central Florida, and they work very hard to accomplish this mission. They offer a very unique service to the community in that they are the only organization that goes out into the field searching for the veterans, providing supplies where they find them, and working with other organizations to get them out of the woods and back into society. If you go to their website, it's located at nvhs.us, and you can also find them on Facebook. Their Veterans Resources link on their webpage is worth its weight in gold, so please go check out the website, and if you're able, make a donation. They do a very, very valuable service to the veterans of Central Florida, and we'd like to expand this and see it expand to the rest of the country. All right. Yeah, the NVHS, great organization. Check them out, nvhs.us. Go check them out. Well, I thought we had William Owens on the line there. It might have been just a caller, and he dropped off before I could pull him up. So apologize about that. I'm going to pull up Franz's book, Stolen History. And I know I've got some bookmarks in here. That hopefully, let's see. I know a bookmark. Here we go. Let's see what I put in here. History has been rewritten since the turn of the century. There's no other way to explain the vast amount of information that once was common knowledge a century ago, which is now forgotten in our time. It would be trivial if the information that I speak of was of minimal importance. But such is not the case. The Democrat Party at the turn of the 19th century seemed to have a decision to make. They either had to accept their past indiscretions or cover them up. They chose to cover them up. The following information about the Democrat Party's downfall is an example as to why the cover-up would be necessary. As we look at the Civil War era, we imagine two warring factions, with the delineation being the North and the South. This would be the common understanding of the fractional issue. I would argue that the textbooks of today fail to mention the political demarcation associated with the Great Conflict. The two political forces that I speak of were that of the Democrat Party and the Republican Party. Sure, there were other political parties which attempted to influence society, but none were nearly as effective as the two mentioned above. Between 1858, when the Republican Party was formed, and by the way, it was formed solely on the purpose of getting rid of slavery. That was why the Republican Party was formed. In the beginning of the Civil War in 1861, these two factions would change the course of America forever and play out what all societal governments of old define themselves by. They either rule or govern. Of course, some leaders attempt to ride the fence, so to speak. But eventually, society will demand a shift one way or the other. Such was the case between 1854 and 1865 when the Democrat Party being pro-slavery and the Republican Party being anti-slavery. One question must be answered before this discussion continues. Was the Civil War about slavery? Well, let's take a look at some of the declarations made by the – because, you know, a lot of people say, well, it was about states' rights. And, yeah, there was states' rights, but states' rights to engage in slavery. So let's take a look at a couple, just a couple, of the Democrat states, Mississippi and Georgia, that made their declarations of secession and their grievances with the federal government when it came to forming a Confederate Union. Mississippi. In the momentous step which our state has taken of dissolving its connection with the government, it is but just that we should declare the prominent reasons which have induced our course. Our position is thoroughly identified with the institution of slavery. There you have it. I don't even need to read anymore. Okay, in their own words. That's it. It had everything to do with slavery. They're not talking about states' rights and on and on. Yes, that was part of it. That's in their own words. Georgia. For the last 10 years, we have had numerous and serious causes of complaint against our non-slave-holding Confederate states with reference to the subject of African slavery. That's how they started off. It was all about slavery. So, great book, Stolen History, Revealing the Truth to Unite America by Franz Gebrau. There's a link right on my page. Of course, you can always get to my page by going to tomgarcia.com, tomgarcia.com. And, let me talk about Susan Bradford for a second here, and I gotta try and find her website. I'm pretty sure I know what it is, but let me, before I do that, we'll talk one more time about Michael Cutler. This is the Michael Cutler Hour. He is at a screening for a documentary he participated in North Carolina, Invasion: Freedom Under Fire 2. So when that comes out, or you're able to get your hands on it one way or another, definitely want to check that out. Michael Cutler on the big screen. He's there for the screen tonight, so that's why I'm filling in for him. Of course, his website, michaelcutler.net. His website with And Magazine, where he does his TV shows, talkborder.com, talkborder.com. And if you give me a second, I will find the website for Susan Bradford. I'm going to have to do a quick search here. Susan Bradford's got a new website that's a drudge life. I'll call it that. Just give you an idea. I don't want to say that it's just that, but a really good site that is new, and it really needs everybody to go kind of check it out and see what it's about. But I like it a lot, and she's got some good headlines. It's called Conservative Scoops. You can find it at conservativescoops.org, conservativescoops.org. And I will, when I get around to it, eventually start blogging for her on the site. But she's got some great folks lined up with this website. Of course, her book, Lynched, she came out with the Abramoff scandal, what really happened there. I was, in August, I was on Jack Abramoff's show for a brief amount of period. But she's going to have blogs with everybody, including me. People from Alan Dershowitz, Ann Coulter, Jack Abramoff, herself, Pat Buchanan. And let's see what else she's got going on there. I'm just looking for some of the headlines. Britain edging toward an exit. EU demands billions more from UK after refusing to rein in spending. Let's see. But, you know, it's got Joe Biden's brother received tens of millions of dollars from $1.5 billion contract to build affordable homes in Iraq. Wow, how do you get in on that? Huh, amazing. Yeah, no corruption there. But one of the things I like about her website is she's got a tip sheet. Fill out the tip sheet. And, to clue her into or get her on to a story that maybe, especially the mainstream media isn't following, but that maybe she hasn't found either. So she can get it on there and we can help her get a scoop on some of these stories ahead of the bigger guys and make her site a little more prominent. I think she's going to do well. I like the site. I like the looks of it. I think you will like it too. So conservativescoops.org, conservativescoops.org. Well, we're getting close to running out of time. I've had a blast. I don't know what happened to our guest, but we'll get him on again. William Owens Jr. Check him out online on Facebook and see what he's up to. And we'll try and get him on here in the next couple weeks. And let's see, who else do we have lined up? We're working on a couple other guests. And I can't off the top of my head think who they are. But some good folks. We had a great interview last week with the Colonel, 26th most decorated officer and a hero in history. Go check that out. It's all on the archive, all in the archives, and Ask Michael Cutler Show. So this is Tom Garcia of the American Hour, filling in for Michael Cutler on the Michael Cutler Hour. Appreciate you being here tonight. Had fun. And Michael will be back next week, same time, 7 p.m. Friday. And if you haven't gotten on his email list, go to the website, sign up for his email list. I get blasts from him, once, twice a week, telling me he's always on different TV shows and radio shows. So you get to see him face-to-face, but then you also get his articles, very, very well-written, thoughtful articles on various subjects, mostly when that have to do with national security and immigration. But you don't want to miss out on that. You want to get on his email list. You won't get inundated. You're not going to get ads or anything else. But in any case, this has been Tom Garcia filling in for Michael Cutler on the Michael Cutler Hour. Have a good night, everybody.